formative items. Andy, you want
to... Sure, I'm trying to be sensitive that you've been going for an hour and a half and people do leave. Do we want 5 minutes before we start?
Let's get started. Let's go ahead and get started.
Let's get right through.
I don't know how...
This won't be long either, will it? Jennifer, you just will come on up. All right, you don't need a break, Mr. Chair.
I'm always clueless.
Mr. Ridley.
Yes, ma'am. We have two items, approval of personnel action items on faculty and staff and faculty. You will find in your notes from S1 to S15 detailed information on the staff recommendations, and some of those actions have already taken place. We are now approving those. Those were completed personnel actions, and then the faculty is the follow-up report through F1 through F13. Ms. Mead, would you have any comments on these?
Nothing else to add unless there's any questions about any personnel actions.
I move to approve.
Move to approve in a second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Pass. Information items, Ms. Mead, Jennifer?
Yes. Bailey Jordan couldn't be with us today. He thought it was best, since he was sick, not to be on the airplane or be with us today. But we're in good hands with our senior internal auditor, Jennifer Miller, so I will turn it over to her to present. Our cycle in internal audit is to at least give you a wrap-up on the previous year's audit and then a quarterly report on the current year. Yeah, that might work for you.
Thank you. Okay, so like Ann said, this is just an internal audit annual update, so it's kind of a year in review for us. And I say us because part of this was Grant Thornton, and part of it was myself, and part of it was the collaboration. So, did I just push the button?
Oh. Turned it off?
I don't know what I just did.
Whatever.
Okay, we're good. Sorry about that. On the agenda, we're going to be looking at the completion rate summary, which is just based on the projects that were on the internal audit plan for fiscal year 2014. And also, we'll look at a summarized version of the audit action plans and the status of all of those action plans that came out of those audits. And then I'll provide a 2015 quarterly update, and I'll share with you some professional development activities.
I'm not good at that either. So
okay. I don't know. So this is just a kind of a bubble chart to show the completion rate summary based on, again, the fiscal year 2014 audit plan. And in total, there were 13 projects on that plan. And during the year, 9 of those projects were completed, and 4 of those projects were moved to the 2015 year. And those 4 are listed on the side. And those were moved due to the timing of the hire of myself. So those are some of the things that we'll be talking about in the upcoming slides. And if you guys have any questions during this, please stop me, and I'll be happy to try to answer those. This is the just a summarized version of action plans that came out of some of those audits that were performed during 2014 and one that was performed in the early 2015 year. And out of those audits, there were 45 action plans total. And to date, there are 38 of those that are closed and 7 of those that remain open or in progress. And there's various dates for those to be closed. That process, I think, is new to the university as far as a follow-up on any action items. And that would mean that I would go back to the person that was audited or the department that was audited and discuss with them those action plans and what actions they've actually taken to close those, or if they need further assistance or to change the target date if something has come up. So that's part of the follow-up process that we're doing. And this is just a quick and dirty version of a quarterly update. Audits and projects completed in the first quarter, the WKUID Center audit was completed. department card, procurement card, compliance reviews. Two of those were completed by myself. And also the implementation of our new ethics and compliance hotline, which was one of the first projects that I completed when I came on board. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. The audits and projects that are currently in process are the OSP, Office of Sponsored Programs, and Grants and Contracts Accounting Review, which was not a full-blown audit. It was more of a very high-level review that did not have any action plans with that. And it's pending internal review right now before we issue that. President's Travel and Entertainment Audit is in process. It's also pending internal review. Planning, Design, and Construction, that audit is in pre-planning stage. And we've, and I say we, this is a Grant Thornton and myself audit together. So that has been in pre-planning for probably a week or two. We've picked the project and started our interviews. And the procurement card audits, those will be continuous throughout the year. That's an effort with myself and the ProCard administrative staff to make their coverage over their audits a little wider. And that was one of the objectives of the actual procurement card audit that Grant Thornton had done earlier in 2014.
Can I ask a question, please?
Sure.
You said some of these audits had been completed and are now in internal review?
Internal review.
That's our review, WKU?
Yes, it goes through Ms. Mead and then
the President and then,
okay.
And then to
and
John
then
Finley.
And then that report's issued and then it comes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You did say internal, not eternal, right?
I
just wasn't quite sure what I heard. But it is internal. I promise you it will move. It
it's
will
an
move
eternal
along.
Internal review. It will never be issued. No.
I wanted to make sure that we will bring closure. We promise.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I guess, and then where does it go once it's approved there? I mean,
We let the president review it, see if he has any questions.
Right.
Then it's submitted to John Ridley and David Porter, and then it comes, circles back into the next quarterly audit report.
Okay. Jennifer and I talk about this as the process goes on, and Ann and I have had communication, so it eventually comes back
Okay. Full
circle.
And this is just an overview of the audit that was for the WKU ID Center that I performed back in June. The objectives were to look at their daily processes and internal controls and to see if they needed any kind of improvements in that aspect. Overall, there were 8 observations, and with those observations came action plans as well. But some of the key findings are listed on here. I won't read all of those, but one of the main ones was a policies and procedural, I guess, a manual, if you will, so that they could be consistent in their operations and the things that they do on a daily basis. There were some outstanding items that were continued to be carried forward on some daily reconciliations that they perform. And one that I do not have listed on here that I want to mention is a policy around their dormant accounts. They have some accounts like for Big Red Dollars or Dining Dollars that the money's left in there and no one comes to claim it. So that would possibly fall under the unclaimed property rules. So that was one thing that we mentioned that they are working on as far as an action plan. And you can see the administration responses below as well. Big thing is, again, the policies and procedures, and that's a living, breathing document that'll be updated as they get through their daily processes and think, oh, we should add this to the actual document so that they are consistent with the way they run things. Not only this audit, I wanted to mention the audit didn't end when the field work ended. It's been an ongoing relationship with them. They feel comfortable calling me and kind of asking me some things as far as what their process should be. So I think that relationship is a good thing, and I hope to continue to build that with them and others around campus. So,
can I have a question?
Yes.
Go back to your I'm going to call it abandoned property.
Okay.
Money's left over in
yes.
the in the audit. What did you determine a dollar amount that was outstanding?
Yes, and it's. I don't want to tell you wrong, so let me look really quick. I think it was around $60,000.
How much?
About $60,000.
About $64,000.
And have you formulated, or have they formulated proposals on how to remediate that?
I think that's a work in process right now. I think Belinda is trying to work with the assistant manager there to figure out what they need to do.
Belinda Higginbotham, who's our bursar, now oversees the ID center. So
yes.
This change occurred relatively recently, and we're going to allow her to make a recommendation back to me on that.
But you're using the term unclaimed property versus those dollars being forfeited by someone, right?
Right.
So is the language in the contractual arrangement with, I'm not just, is an idea, if someone abandons the card and leaves the campus, that looked to me it would be a forfeiture of the funds, not unclaimed property.
Well,
they voluntarily can put money on their ID to used for campus expenditures.
Well, I understand
so
the process.
So if those balances exist there, we have to evaluate at some point whether those balances are ours as forfeited or whether they go back to the original owners.
We created a process that we go have to go back and track down people for $10 and $40 and $100. There has to be some level of policy that we would have to say if it's this much over or under, we've got to, because we can't afford to run large
right.
staffing
no,
time and, to chase people down.
And that no, and that's what should be part of their record retention policy, which is part of that action plan and recommendation for them to determine how they want to proceed with those funds.
Whether you say that any unclaimed balances after 5 years can revert to the central budget or you know that type of situation, I'm not sure what we'll put in place.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But instead, we just keep accruing a balance. So we need to address that recommendation.
This is just a very summarized overview of some of the other projects that we've completed. And the OSP and GCA review, I think I said before, it was a very high level.
Don't know what they are. Sponsored program.
Office of Sponsored Programs and the Grants and Contracts Accounting Department. It was a high level review, which really entailed interviewing some personnel and surveying some end users of their services. Some of the things that came out of that are listed also for you. One of them was a possible implementation of a banner module for time and effort reporting, which is the time and effort that someone would spend with their grant, grant research, things like that. So right now that's a manual process, and I think it's very time-consuming. And from what I understand, we already own that module. So that was one thing that we suggested, that we actually put that on live and use it. One of the things I think that came up in our interviews was possible communication issues between the two departments. And they currently have one meeting a month, so we suggested that they would probably increase that to two or more if they need to, and also possibly consider co-locating the departments in the same physical building. And these are, again, just suggestions. Because it was not a full-blown audit, there were no action plans with these recommendations. The procurement card compliance reviews, I mentioned that I completed two department card reviews, and I used the compliance review criteria that the ProCard administrative staff uses. And that includes a checklist of different things. And one example is the number of missing receipts with that monthly procurement card statement. Are the statements approved by their supervisor? Different things that are listed in our policy that need to be completed. Of those two, one resulted in a warning status and one resulted in a competent status. And the warning status for that particular department required that the access to their limits on their card be decreased for a certain period of time, and also that the record keeper would have to go through the training as well. And some minor violations that were noted on this compliance review, there was no card log, which is part of policy. They were kept in unlocked location. Sales tax was on some of those receipts, which sometimes cannot be helped. Gratuity was greater than 18% on some as well. And a couple of items were sent to personal addresses of the faculty members, which was addressed with them and the record keeper. The other project is the Ethics and Compliance Hotline. We went live with that on July 31st, 2014. And that project in itself was a good one to take on. It was kind of in progress when I started. And so we wrapped up implementing the actual policy that goes along with that, which is the fiscal misconduct policy. And I introduced the hotline to faculty and staff through the first issue of the internal audit newsletter. And so far to date, this actually says four cases, but I had another one show up, I think, yesterday. So there are five cases currently reported. Three of those are currently closed based on the review that I did, and two are in process.
Question?
Yes.
I remember getting the policy and reading it. Who reviews your suggestion to close a case? What's the review protocol?
Well, right now, if I get a case and I need assistance with that, I'll go to whoever it may need to be as far as what the report is entailing. For instance, one of those reports would probably need to be looked at by HR. So the process is to bring in people that I would need to help review just to give feedback to me so that I know that I'm heading in the right direction. Does that answer your question?
Well, let me go back. When you get a case, who do you notify that you've received that case? What's your chain of command?
I don't think that's in policy.
You notify which individuals that a hotline claim has been placed, the supervisor and the individual?
Well, the policy in the system, when I get a report, I will notify the reporter, who is anonymous usually, through the system that we have as the third party service provider. And that will be an automatic message that they can look at once they get back into the system and see that I've replied to say that it's in review.
So would Ms. Meade know that you've got a case active? Is there a standard protocol where she's notified, or Chairman Ridley is aware of the cases that are before you? Or?
No, we haven't addressed that. For example, if there was a complaint about my use of the pro card, you know, in that situation, or someone that reports to me, if it's me, I think that you obviously you'd keep some distance from my involvement. We may need to further address this, but essentially, I think your point is at the end, when she uses her professional judgment that no further action is needed. You've shared that with me, but there's no formal process that says that we take action to bring closure.
Well, this area in the hotline is where you detect most of your problems. This is where you're going to really have the situations that require attention. What I'm concerned about is that we've got a chain of command that knows when they come in besides one person.
Okay.
That we know the status of that ongoing, and that if there's a recommendation to close or to proceed, then that needs to be checked off by someone
Other than Jennifer?
Other than Jennifer.
Okay.
And then there needs to be, again, I want to stay in conformity with what the trends are among universities, but there would seem to be some sort of report that would come at least to the finance committee, if not the full board, on a annual basis semi that says, in narrative, generalized forms, 18 hotlines, topics, resolution, that sort of thing, so that we would know that it was functioning.
We can do that.
But that's how the cases at the University of Louisville were discovered, was exactly that. Somebody was a whistleblower.
I will say that I'm the system administrator, so, and I'm the main user of that system, so all the reports come to me through email, but my backup system admin, who is Jim Cummings, he also gets those emails, so he's aware of any reports that come through the hotline, and our HR director is the system advocate. I don't think he gets the actual emails when something is reported, but Jim Cummings does, and I use him as someone that I talk to in case I'm not aware of where I need to go as far as how I get started. So he is aware of those, and we discuss those things in length.
I appreciate that comment, but I don't think it's textbook. We'll bring it to closure
and approval on either a quarterly or some report back through the board.
Let me ask a question. I want to tail off on you just a little bit. Wasn't there, I may be reading the wrong policy, but I thought there was a committee formed when complaints came in. And Jennifer, you were the head of that committee. I mean, I believe you were. I forget the number of people, but I remember there was a selection process for that particular committee. I mean, that may be the very process, Freddie, that you're talking about.
I think you're right now that you're saying that. I know we've got to separate those that are easily dismissed and not needing any further investigation from those that require general counsel.
You may be on that group should it elevate to needing additional investigation.
There is a process in the policy that talks about the preliminary review, which I do because those are coming to me. And I have one of those currently that will need further investigation. So there is a formal notification to the accused person and their supervisor. When those reports come in, I have so many days to do a prelim and determine based on my judgment whether or not that needs to go forward. And that's also not just my judgment, but I go and determine who I need to talk to, whether it be HR or whether it be possibly Jim Cummings, and determine whether or not I need to go through a further investigation. And once that happens, the formal notification goes to the accused person and their supervisor and whoever else needs to be notified. And the full investigation would include other people as far as possible committee members. And we haven't done that part yet because there haven't been that many that we determined that need that. But we do have one currently in process. I think because this is so new for us, it's a learning curve, and we can change our process, you know, when we need to.
I commend you for, you know, I know your intentions are well and stuff, but I don't think we've got our accountability chain set up yet.
We'll do that.
I concur with you. I thought the committee process was an important part of that process, Freddie. But again, it's a new policy, so you know it takes, I guess, time to. One little factual question: of the four cases reported today, or five, did any of those cases involve the minor violations that are in the procurement card compliance review above?
No.
Okay.
And that's all I can say.
I do want to say I thought your email to campus, to faculty staff all, was excellent and informative, and I picked that up and put that in my faculty regent newsletter anyway. And again, I don't think people are running out to report people, but I think there is a general better feeling that if somebody needed that procedure, it's there and they feel better about it. So the feedback's been good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That.
Okay. Any other questions or comments before I move on? Thank you. This is just a wrap-up of the budget to actual for fiscal year 2014, and it's kind of laid out there, so there's not a lot to talk about. I did break out the actual incurred for the third service party provider that provides the ethics and compliance hotline, and that number will actually be cut in half for the 2015 because that includes the implementation and setup fee. Professional development activities, I know I didn't start until April, but prior to that in March, I completed the internal audit certification process, so I'm very happy about that. In May, through the ACUA, which is the Association of College and University Auditors Group, they provide the webinars to members, and so I did the tax just for auditors, which was great. June, I'm not sure what CUPA stands for.
University.
I'm not sure, but
in universities.
Through that, they had a really great multiple module setup that I attended, and it was very high level of just understanding higher education and learning all the terms and learning the different things about the history of higher ed, which was very helpful to me.
I'll interject there that the Southern membership of the University Business Officers does the College Business Management Institute, and it's 1 week, and to complete it you have to go 3 consecutive summers. So that'll be on Jennifer's list, given that she's coming from the private sector, and I think that the College Business Management Institute will be real helpful for you.
The last slide is just another overview of what you've already seen before when we approved the fiscal 2015 audit plan, and this just breaks it out in quarters so you can see what's coming up for this year. I don't know if anybody has any questions about what's listed on there.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And Ann knows this. Anytime I see the word bonding, I'm going to ask a question about it. Right, Ann?
Yeah.
Okay. My question, it really is, I just attended a conference in Chicago on new disclosure requirements. And I know you have to file with Emma. Mm-hmm. And some of these new disclosure requirements are becoming onerous in what we have to do. Are we looking at our disclosure now? For those of you that are not aware of this, what disclosure means is that the SEC, through one of its arms, the MSRB, requires that issuers of debt and conduit borrowers be responsible for filing financial statements and making other disclosure undertakings in the event that there's a rating change or something of that nature. And what Western does, and I don't mean to step in, but what Western does is you actually file some of those financial statements per QCIP number. Is that correct?
I believe we do.
Yeah, and will the audit look into whether or not, two questions, will the audit look into whether or not we are making those disclosures, number one, in that requirement, and number two, our next deadline is in December, I believe, from MSRB, not from the state.
I'll have to check with Jim Cummings, the Chief Financial Officer.
Okay.
He hasn't raised any concerns.
Yeah,
we will talk. That's one that we talked to Bailey Jordan about, right, about exactly what to include in the bonding debt capacity, mm-hmm, and we can add that parameter,
okay,
to the review. We'll do that. Thank you.
So you know, now you know not to put the word bonding in any presentation, right?
Or you can help with advice for free.
All right.
There you go.
I know I turn my clock on when I do that.
Are there any other questions that I might be able to answer?
Any questions? So from this committee meeting, I'm taking away two action items for further follow-up is the Ethics and Compliance Hotline Resolution Chain of Command or thereof, a report of some type for the resolution of those that we would be comfortable about. So that we will review that as well. And then
disclosure issues.
Disclosure, bonding, and debt capacity review and disclosure issues in the timetable.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I think that's a fair way to say it.
Any other comments for the Finance Committee?
We have one last information item.
Yes.
The last item on the agenda is to give you an update on our privatization of health services, GGC at WKU. Most of the folks in this community know what GGC is, so Graves Gilbert Clinic. They did take over operation on August 1. As of the middle of September, they reported back to me that they had 1,740 patients through the door and 1,450 face-to-face provider visits. They are comfortable with their hitting the ground and meeting the campus's needs. Obviously, there were some surprises for them and some surprises for us, but we're in communication daily. We received a check for supplies, as we had indicated that they would owe us for the purchase of supplies. We received a check for slightly more than $8,300 buying our inventory of supplies. The tougher issue has been the medical appraisal. While we had a contract with a professional to appraise the medical equipment, and this appraiser gave us a report, this report was challenged in some ways by the CEO, Chris Thorne, of Graves Gilbert. It is not fully resolved, and I talked to Mr. Thorne this week, and I said, we've got to bring closure on this. So to give you a little perspective on what his issues are or Graves Gilbert's issues are, the report came back that the fair market value would be approximately $136,000 for all of the equipment. The most significant piece of equipment was related to X-ray, which comes in different parts, everything from a power source to the actual equipment. But I've estimated that approximately 60% of the assessed value of equipment is really tied up into the X-ray equipment. When Graves Gilbert went through the appraiser's report, there were items on the list that are 5 or more years old. That the items obviously last. And Grace Gilbert has challenged the appraiser from the standpoint that that some of the appraised values are 70, 80, and 90% of the cost of purchasing it new. So we want to work through that issue, bring closure to it, say we will finalize the purchase of equipment, and then determine what WKU needs to do with appropriate distribution of or disposition is the word of any surplus property that equipment that Grace Gilbert chooses to buy new and not use or purchase what we have. Any questions on that one before I go to my other point?
Is there much of a marketplace for such equipment that they might choose not to purchase from us?
It'll be a little bit of a challenge. I think that I might have to, again, contract with someone that knows how to sell such specialized equipment. We have a surplus, a wonderful surplus program here that takes advantage of eBay, but I just don't believe that medical equipment on eBay probably is the
maybe the appropriate way to dispose of it. But we'll
also would point out that it's got radioactive issues too. So that's
well, no, I'm not talking about the X-ray. The X-ray equipment is terribly unique and hard to move, and there's a lot of issues about that. But I'm talking about it, whether it's exam tables or other items such as they had a long litany. I'm not sure I brought my list with me.
And I have a question. Did this
blood pressure cups. I learned a new word. I'll look at the doctors in the room. I can't even pronounce it. Sigmoidopneumonometer. Okay, I got close. So I actually practiced that word, and then I got in here and I couldn't use it. And I looked it up and I said, okay, it's blood pressure cups. So it's it has multiple syllables in it, with it ending with an E R. So in all seriousness, Graves Gilbert's got to bring closure to this one, and they understand.
Well, this equipment didn't just show up all of a sudden one day. It was in there when they went through and looked at the whole place when they said that they would be willing to do this. So,
yes, they offered somewhere in the range of $60,000, and that's why we have a medical appraiser, because there was a fairly significant gap between what. But again, I think that there needs to be more dialogue. There are some items on the list, seriously, that aren't very expensive but are showing up on the medical appraiser report close to 100% of the value when they're more than a year old. So that's one issue to work toward. Mr. Ridley, you asked me to update the board on the health services reserve. We finished the year, the fiscal year, with a reserve of $955,433. We closed health services the end of July, so in this fiscal year we will have some additional expenses. We had some revenue that came in, obviously, in July. We had salaries for July, we had vacation payout, and we have severance pay. Some purchases, but very little. So I anticipate that when we close this fiscal year, we will have a health services reserve of approximately $670,000.
And
after you close fiscal year 15, we should be, because that's July payroll, vacation payout, severance pay are the most significant variables that were expensed in July. So the reserve would go down to about $670,000.
That's capital expenditures for the parking lot to make that work. Does that come out of that money too?
We removed it before the 955. So I know there's an interest to make sure that will be a distinct university reserve with its own identity. And it cannot be expended without presidential approval or recommendation back to the board, actually, as it would be unbudgeted.
Well, treat it like the
university reserve.
Care reserve. And in my opinion, that's important, because if you have a pandemic or other health-related issue, you may need a reserve fund for your health center to cover unexpected expenses that the university might have to undertake to protect students and faculty and staff.
John, one question. She said $670,000 in reserve, and then you made a comment about parking to reduce that number further.
Was that number? When we first started negotiating, wasn't that number like $1.3 million?
We expanded the parking lot. It was a central location, partially anticipating that Grace Gilbert would want more patient parking. Mm-hmm. But also knowing that we needed parking spots. So that's why the 955 is brought down.
We
paid for it before. The 955 reflects the funding of the parking.
Okay, but I misunderstood what you
said. There will not be,
it was going further.
The only draw after June 30 is payroll, vacation payout, severance pay, so I pretty well have the number, $669,550. I don't have any real reason to believe that number would change.
No, I probably heard him different, that's all.
Are you still receiving patient receivables?
Good question. I haven't asked that one. We are doing our best to say that they would be collected by us, but I'll follow up on that one. That didn't occur to me this morning.
Are we also, have we resolved all of the insurance issues? Because the thing that landed in my inbox as the students came back to school in August was that there seemed to be some confusion down there, that there was some rejection of health insurance that we, that, you know, that our graduate students buy here, you know, through our third-party vendor.
Yeah, no, we are fine on that. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't have some issues when students landed, but best I'm aware, there are no health insurance issues now.
Okay, so they've sorted out, because I guess I would classify that as customer service issue. So we got all
there were some transitional issues as we couldn't predict. You're asking a private sector medical care provider to understand college health care.
And they had a
few surprises. So, but on the flip side, I can tell you anecdotal that Chris Thorne personally drove three patients down to the Grace Gilbert Clinic when he intervened to say, no, this is not acceptable, and I'm going to come down there, pick up the student, and assist them with the rest of their medical care. So they've been very hands-on about this. He's an interesting CEO.
He's quite visible in the clinic himself a couple times a week, and he was also on move-in day, was out helping students move in the residence hall rooms.
I won't make any comments about Grace Gilbert, but just in healthcare in general, and since we are self-funded, I think, you know, we all need to recognize what leverage corporations and large employers like the university have in the healthcare world. And I think the time is upon us to demand a little more. I hate to use the word transparency. I know it's hackneyed, but that's what we really need to know in terms of costs. And, you know, I'm talking about procedures, much like the article in the Courier Journal a few months ago showed one hospital charged $5,600 for the same procedure that another hospital charged $2,200 for. And as a self-insured entity, we should have an interest in what we pay and who we pay what, and put a blindfold on as far as that goes. The Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky out of Louisville is convening a blue ribbon panel next month on that very issue, because much like the Pritchard Committee leaned on the business community to move education in Kentucky years ago, the business community, and I'm thinking of the university as part of the business community here, really has a lot more leverage than they have chosen to use to date to look at what they're paying for health care. And you should be interested in what an MRI scan costs here versus there, or any procedure.
We're going to, at the next Finance and Budget Committee meeting, do a presentation on our, best I can say, is revamped, restructured health insurance plan that goes into effect in January. That's significantly consumer-driven, intended to have WKU employees being have resources to understand what services cost here and there. And a significant component related to wellness and incentive funding coming to them up front for achieving certain wellness objectives in our plan. So I'll follow up with you on that as we bring our plan restructure to the board for everyone to see.
And that's what I was speaking about earlier with accountable care organizations. It's really going to turn how we pay for health care upside down, and in doing so, it will bring those numbers into sharp focus, and accountable care organizations will care what Mr. Dermatologist A is charging for the same procedure that Mr. Dermatologist B is or whatever. It's going to throw a greater competitiveness into the cost aspect of healthcare than there's been since prior to World War II.
That completes my report.
Any other questions or comments for Ann or Jennifer? Jennifer, thank you very much for that audit, and your I would like to reiterate your comments of the cooperation that all of the departments that you were working with, how they participated. And it's always a fear, I think, among a lot of us, and sometimes in the business world, when you use the word audit, you think there was something wrong, and that's the reason you do it. And that's not actually accurate, that an audit actually should improve the processes and the procedures and the details so that the results that we're all getting can easily be seen in a good audit trail. So thank you very much. And Ann, thank you very much for recognizing the skills and talents for your department.
Good, and good feedback, and we will address that through the next report.
Mr. Chairman, that should conclude the Finance and Budget Committee meeting.